Welcome to a Buddhist podcast for May the 11th, 2007. This is a free show about the Buddhism of Nichiren Daishonin.
I met a man when I was traveling, and we talked all night. We saw the sunlight. It only takes 1 minute to say hello, then you're on your way. If not you, then who? If not now, then when? If not anyone, who's gonna be your friend? All I wanna be is your friend.
We are proud members of the SGI, the Soka Gakkai International. We are not official spokespeople. We are just members who have been practicing Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism for a long time and want to share our understanding of it to the best of our ability, even if only a single sentence or phrase.
Hello everyone, welcome to tonight's show. My name is Jason Jarrett.
Hello, and my name is Karen Jarrett. How you're all doing? Tonight's show will be on attaining Buddhahood in this lifetime. Nichiren Daishonin wrote this letter around 1255 to a lay believer called Tokijonin, who had been practicing for a very short time. But before we start with the lecture, let's listen to Ken George reading SGI President Daisaku Ikeda's editorial. Enjoy listening.
Okay, so this is for the May editorial. Here's Ken.
Transforming society in the spirit of Risho and Koku. Buddhism encompasses all worldly affairs, bring forth its profound wisdom, and achieve glorious triumphs. What is life's true purpose? British historian Arnold J. Toynbee, 1889 to 1975, suggested that it lies in trying to change the universe in which we find ourselves placed, trying to add good things to it, if possible. Since we have been born as human beings, we should do our best to make the world even a little bit better than when we found it. This is the key to true fulfillment, concluded Toynbee, an eminent scholar who had studied the vast panorama of human history. That's why he was impressed by our grassroots movement, dedicated to positively transforming society based on the quintessential teachings of Mahayana Buddhism, and viewed it as a momentous and historic spiritual achievement. Our members shine with pride as the protagonists of this grand endeavour, nobly sharing hardships and joys in our struggles for the law, the boundless satisfaction of building a peaceful land that will endure throughout the three existences. Nichiren Daishonin's lifelong teaching begins and ends with his treatise on establishing the correct teaching for the peace of the land. The title of this work is based on the concept of Risho and Koku, to establish the true and bring peace to the land. Establishing the true means winning over evil and injustice, spreading the true law, and thereby firmly establishing the principles of respect for the sanctity of life and human dignity. Bringing peace to the land means realizing security and happiness for all, and actualizing a prosperous society and peaceful world. During World War II, Soka Gakkai founding president Tsunesaburo Magikuchi and his disciple, second president Jose Toda, fought courageously against Japanese militarism, holding aloft the banner of Risho and Koku, a teaching of hope for all humanity. And looking back, the Gosho that Mr. Toda lectured on at the discussion meeting where I first met him 60 years ago, on August 14, 1947, was also the Daishonin's landmark treatise on this theme. Nichiren Shonin, 1665 to 1726, who is known as a great restorer of Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism, wrote regarding the concept of Rishoen Koku, "In terms of its literal meaning, it refers to Japan and the time in which the Daishonin lived. But in terms of its intent, it also refers to the entire world and future ages." My inauguration as the third president of the Soka Gakkai on May 3, 1960, took place 700 years after Nichiren Daishonin submitted on establishing the correct teaching, on July 16, 1260. A treatise of remonstrance to the country's rulers, which was written in dialogue form. Embracing the Daishonin spirit, I have engaged in dialogue with leaders around the globe and built a citadel of diversely talented people committed to peace, culture, and education, which stands as a beacon illuminating the future. I am currently carrying on a dialogue with Dr. Zhao Sung Yi, Emeritus Professor of the Department of Chinese Studies of the Chinese University of Hong Kong, who is regarded as one of China's most preeminent scholars. Dr. Zhao was deeply moved that in On Establishing the Correct Teaching, the Daishonin primarily expresses the word land or nation with a Chinese character that portrays people within a domain. In other words, the people are the most important element and the foundation of the nation. Today, our Soka Gakkai Women's Division members are playing a leading role in advancing the ideal of Rishoen Koku. These dedicated women work tirelessly in order to meet and talk with people about the humanistic teachings of Buddhism, opening the way for a just and peaceful world. Thinking people around the globe share one important criterion in evaluating religious groups: not what they profess, but what they do. Dr. Christopher Queen, a lecturer in Buddhism at Harvard University in the United States, has commented, "The Buddha responded to the social and spiritual crisis of his time by speaking boldly, acting decisively, and creating value in society." Without a vision of social change, embodied in creative new institutions such as the Sangha, the community of practitioners, religion becomes alienated from the life of the people and undergoes a spiritual death. Dr. Queen recognizes the Soka Gakkai as a model of active, socially engaged Buddhism and a world organization dedicated to fighting social suffering. Nichiren Daishonin declares that the calamities and disasters that plague the land will continue unabated unless we succeed in our struggle to spread the positive principles of Buddhism. Establishing the true means ensuring that truth and justice triumph, and this opens the way to bringing peace to the land. I wish to entrust the youth with the glorious banner of this shared commitment of mentor and disciple. Ever victorious youth, burning with the great mission of building a new age. Translated from the May 2007 issue of the Daibyaka Renge, the Soka Gakkai Monthly Study Journal.
I think that's just terrific, isn't it? He's got a lovely voice.
He has, indeed.
Yeah, what a great message from President Ikeda too. Okay, so shall we get started with the lecture?
I think so.
Yeah, you up for that?
Mm-hmm. We got tea ready.
We got tea. Where's my tea?
Over there.
Hopefully by now you'll be able to hear the new sound. You can be able to hear the new super gulp.
Slurp, slurp.
Okay, right. Here we go. This lecture is called On Attaining Buddhahood. It's based on the letter, so here we go. Are you ready? Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure.
Okay. So this month I celebrate 20 years of practice with the Gohonzon, and I can't think of a better way to celebrate this milestone than doing this podcast here. At the start of my next 20 years of practice, I'm going back to the beginning of Nichiren Daishonin's writings to study a letter written by Nichiren Daishonin called On Attaining Buddhahood in This Lifetime. The original letter has been lost in the sands of the 700 years that have gone by since that time, but it's generally believed that it was written in Kamakura in 1255. As many of you know, Nichiren Daishonin first declared his teaching of chanting Nam-myoho Renge-kyo in April 1253. 2 years later, in 1255, Nichiren Daishonin moved to Kamakura, the seat of power in medieval Japan. Among the people who began to chant at this time were Shijo Kingo and Toki Jonin, and it's believed this letter was written to Toki Jonin. The letter contains the core elements of Nichiren Daishonin's practice. Nichiren makes it absolutely clear to Toki Jonin, right at the start of his practice, what this Buddhism is about and why it is different from the other religions of the time. So I'd like to spend this evening talking with you about these points to the best of my ability.
If you wish to free yourself from the sufferings of birth and death you have endured since time without beginning, and to attain without fail unsurpassed enlightenment in this lifetime, you must perceive the mystic truth that is originally inherent in all living beings.
The first three words are so Buddhist, aren't they? If you wish. It's up to you. No one can make you. It's up to your desire. If you wish to free yourself, practicing Buddhism is a privilege and never an obligation. The sufferings of birth and death that he talks about are the sufferings that Shakyamuni practiced to overcome: birth, old age, sickness and death. So now, essentially in Buddhism, there are two approaches to overcoming these sufferings. The first approach is contained in the teachings before the Lotus Sutra, and it teaches this idea of transmigration, that we are born again and again to go through the suffering of birth and death. We suffer because of our desires. The logic goes like this: because we have desires, we create actions or karma to satisfy those desires. These actions cause us to suffer, and that suffering begets a more desperate desire to overcome the suffering, which results us in taking actions that cause us to suffer some more. So this view of life, this kind of futile view of life really, is miserable, and it led to a very strong belief in other forms of Buddhism that the only way we can break this spiral of suffering is to eradicate our desires. So eradicating desires has been a large part of other Buddhist practices. The second approach is to view the cycle of birth and death as our commitment to guide everyone towards enlightenment. We are born to bring out the best in ourselves and those around us. We are born to attain enlightenment, and with our death comes the opportunity for people to seek to understand this mystic truth of life. When we are alive, we are like the waves on the ocean, and when we die, we return to the ocean of life. Nichiren Daishonin teaches the second approach, that we are born to bring out the best in ourselves, society, and the land around us. And he writes,
if you wish to free yourself from the sufferings of birth and death you have endured since time without beginning, and to attain without fail unsurpassed enlightenment in this lifetime, you must perceive the mystic truth that is originally inherent in all living beings.
If you wish to break free of this cycle of suffering, you have to become aware of the mystic truth of life that is inherent in all life. If the ocean is made of seawater and so are the waves, then life is the mystic truth and so are all individual lives. This means that within everyone's life is the ability to overcome suffering. The next question is obvious. If this mystic truth is within me and the entire universe, how can I bring it out to reveal my limitless potential? Clearly, we need a way to bring out our limitless potential. Tien Tai lived 700 years before the Daishonin. He was known as the Buddha of the Middle Day of the Law because he revived the teachings of the Lotus Sutra and recognized this mystic truth in life. He established a practice of contemplation and meditation to enable people to observe their minds to try and observe the mystic truth within their lives. Tien Tai was the brains behind the concept of the 3,000 worlds in a single moment of life. However, his practice took a lot of time and effort and was beyond the practical grasp of most ordinary people. Nichiren's first achievement was to name this mystic truth. When we give something a name, we enable all people to share an understanding of it. So naturally, the next sentence of the letter is this.
This truth is Myoho Renge Kyo. Chanting Myoho Renge Kyo will therefore enable you to grasp the mystic truth innate in all life.
The name Nichiren Daishonin gives to this mystic truth is Myoho Renge Kyo. Myoho Renge Kyo is the name of the ocean of life that we all emerge from and return to. It is the essence of life and the mystic truth that is originally inherent in all living beings. Having named the mystic truth as Myoho Renge Kyo, Nichiren's task was to establish a practice for bringing it forth from within our lives, and he writes,
Chanting Myoho Renge Kyo will therefore enable you to grasp the mystic truth innate in all life.
Nichiren Daishonin added the word Nam to Myoho Renge Kyo as the way to chant. Nam is a shortened version of Namu. It is a Sanskrit term meaning to link, to bond, to fuse with. Interestingly, the Latin basis of the word religion is religare, which also means to link, to bond, to fuse with. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo means to link, to bond, to fuse with the mystic truth inherent in life. Chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is not only a determination to dedicate our lives to this truth, but it also is a means for summoning forth the mystic truth from within our lives. Anyone who chants Nam-myoho Renge Kyo can bring out the mystic truth of life and live in accord with it. Chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is the Buddhist practice for fusing our lives with the life of the universe. As we attempt to do this, though, the innate darkness of life rises up in different forms to prevent us. From statements of worthlessness to the myriad of obstacles coming between us and even a moment to chant. It takes tremendous courage to overcome some of these obstacles. I think starting to chant is a bit like putting up a tent. Putting the first pole up is really difficult. It's a hell of a struggle. All the canvas of the tent wants to stay on the ground. It takes great tenacity to get the first pole of faith upright in our lives and great courage to overcome the challenges involved. I remember the first time I chanted with other people. It took a lot of courage to overcome my sense of self-consciousness. Now, of course, that fear dissipated quickly, but only to be followed by the challenge of chanting at home. At the time, I lived at home with my parents. My parents didn't know anything about Buddhism, except for the fact that my uncle was a Buddhist. And as my uncle introduced me, I was afraid that they would, if they found out, they'd say that I was only chanting because he'd told me about it, or worse still, whether they might confront him about telling me about chanting. I was very conscious about what my parents might say, and I was so afraid that I chanted in secret for a few weeks. Every time I chanted in my room, I would chant like a timid mouse, listening for any movement in the house that might betray that I'd been heard. When I heard someone coming up the stairs, I'd quickly but quietly put away the bell and the candles, my book and the beads. I'm laughing now, but very quickly, the more I chanted, the stronger I felt. And within a month or so, I stopped caring what other people thought. Anything that made me feel this happy and this strong was not something that I was going to stop or hide. I find it really interesting that in this passage, Nichiren uses the word grasp.
Chanting Myoho Renge Kyo will therefore enable you to grasp the mystic truth innate in all life.
Grasp. It means to clutch onto, to latch onto, to grab or to seize, to hold onto. It gives me the impression that the mystic truth is an elusive thing. On one level, was indeed elusive, because before Nichiren Daishonin was able to establish the practice to grasp it, it took 2,000 years or so. On another level, though, it's elusive for a deep reason that has profound significance for those who practice this Buddhism. The term for chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo is often called chanting Daimoku for short, like an abbreviated way. Daimoku is a Japanese word meaning supreme title, as in the supreme title of the universe, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. Now, there are two types of chanting Daimoku. The first is the Daimoku of faith, and the second is the Daimoku of practice. Well, if it's all Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, what's the difference, you might ask? Daimoku of faith is what takes place in our hearts. It is a battle within us to overcome our ignorance or fundamental darkness. It is the extent to which our hearts accept and believe that we are entities of the mystic law. Faith is a battle against the dark nature of life that wants to keep us from being happy. It is a continuous battle to believe in our inherent greatness. Daimoku of practice is the chanting aloud of Nam-myoho-renge-kyo and the taking of action for the happiness of ourselves and others. The elusive element that we need to grasp is the human heart. It is the human heart that is fickle and is the single most important factor in whether or not we can reveal this mystic truth, our Buddhahood. This is why the Daishonin writes in the Strategy of the Lotus Sutra,
"It is the heart that is important. No matter how earnestly Nichiren prays for you, if you lack faith, it will be like trying to set fire to wet tinder. Spur yourself to master the power of faith."
Such a good quote, that is. Such a good quote. Like trying to set fire to wet tinder. The battle to overcome our ignorance and believe in our limitless potential is one that never ends. We make a prayer, we chant, and then we get up. When we doubt, it's like an anti-prayer. We make a prayer, "I am a Buddha, I can do this," and we chant, and then we get up. And then sometimes, maybe sometimes more often for other people than others, sometimes the moment we hit an obstacle, we make a new prayer. It's called the anti-prayer. "I can't do this, I'm useless." So we make a prayer, then we make the anti-prayer. Whichever one we end up in determines the outcome. Our prayer has to be congruent with our chanting, "I am Buddha, I am Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo." When we believe we are entities of the mystic law, and we chant with this attitude, then we are unstoppable. Nichiren Daishonin, through his actions, was unstoppable. He was able to give full expression to the mystic truth of the universe. His life functioned for the happiness of all people. This is why he is called a Buddha. When we live our lives based on believing in and chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, we reveal the same quality of Buddha in our own lives. Revealing Buddhahood just as we are is another reason why many people struggle to understand Nichiren Daishonin's writings. At the time of Nichiren Daishonin, and in many places and religions today, people believed the difference between the Buddha and common people was so great a leap it could never be crossed by human beings. Over time, people began to chant the name of Buddhas or gods to come and save them. In this belief system, Buddhas were believed to be godlike beings that achieved the reward of paradise, heaven if you like, that they were too good to be sat with the likes of us. And because of this chasm of difference existed, there was no route for people to become enlightened. The most people could expect would be to beg for salvation. We have to be really careful and remind ourselves when we chant that the Gohonzon will not come and save us. If we think like this, we are not practicing correctly. So, here comes Nichiren Daishonin, who explains that the Buddha is not a supreme being we aspire to become in the afterlife of countless lifetimes. Buddha is not a supernatural being of whom we beg favours or, worse still, forgiveness. No other form of Buddhism had a concrete route for revealing Buddhahood in this lifetime. It is because we can achieve Buddhahood in this lifetime that we can attain Buddhahood this week, today, this hour, this minute, this second. In fact, Nichiren Daishonin taught that we can attain enlightenment in this moment, right here, right now, and without even needing to change as much as the clothes that we stand in. He writes in the letter, those initially aspiring to the way.
Therefore, when once we chant Myoho Renge Kyo, with just that single sound, we summon forth and manifest the Buddha nature of all Buddhas, all existences, all bodhisattvas, all voice hearers, all the deities such as Brahma, Chakra, and King Yama, the sun and moon, and the myriad of stars, the heavenly gods and earthly deities, on down to hell dwellers, hungry spirits, animals, asuras, human and heavenly beings, and all other living beings. This blessing is immeasurable and boundless.
If Nichiren Daishonin's life was a concrete expression of the mystic law, or Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, then what is our life a concrete expression of? If we are not expressing our limitless potential, what are we expressing? Are we expressing a world of desperate hope? Are we expressing lives that are waiting to be saved? How are we living our lives? Shall we go on to the next passage?
Yes. The Lotus Sutra is the king of sutras, true and correct in both word and principle. Its words are the ultimate reality, and this reality is the mystic law, Myoho. It is called the mystic law because it reveals the principle and the mutually inclusive relationship of a single moment of life and all phenomena. That is why this sutra is the wisdom of all Buddhas. Life at each moment encompasses the body and mind and the self and environment of all sentient beings in the 3,000 realms, including plants, sky, earth, and even the minutest particles of dust. Life at each moment permeates the entire realm of all phenomena. To be awakened to this principle is itself the mutually inclusive relationship of life at each moment and all phenomena.
Thank you. When the Daishonin describes the Lotus Sutra as the king of sutras, it's worth remembering the purpose of a king. The purpose of a king worthy of the name is not to dominate his subjects, but to bring out the greatness of his people. By understanding the Lotus Sutra, we see the true meaning of the other sutras. Now, Nichiren Daishonin moves away from talking about the mystic truth to talking about the mystic law. So what is the mystic law then? The mystic law is a law like a law of science, if you like, that says that all of life is one, that life, or Myoho Renge Kyo, or Buddhahood, is inherent in everything. So let's quickly talk about Myoho of Myoho. There are three meanings to the word Myo of Myoho, and they can each be used to describe the benefits of Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Firstly, Myo means perfectly endowed. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is perfectly endowed because by chanting it, anyone can reveal Buddhahood. Not a special class of people, not in the future, but anyone can reveal Buddhahood right here and right now just by chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Secondly, Myo means transformation. It means that anyone who chants Nam-myoho Renge Kyo can transform lives of suffering into lives of happiness and benefit. It can move our lives from the shaky ground of tactics and short-term gain to lives of meaning and purpose, founded in the mystic truth of life. Grappling with our dark nature to allow our inherent brilliance to emerge, we come to see that becoming a Buddha is not setting out on a journey to become something else. It's about transforming our lives from within, where we are right now. Thirdly, Myo means to revive. Because Nam-myoho Renge Kyo enables anyone to draw forth the mystic truth of life from within themselves, it offers a source of hope in deadlock situations.
No family row or global or intergalactic war is separate from the mystic law. Therefore, we can always chant and always bring out wisdom and compassion to revive our humanity. Mankind has tried time and time again to try to force people to hold particular beliefs or values, and time and again we have failed. No army will ever be big enough for long enough to make people change their views and direction. No coercion can suppress the will of the human spirit. Rather than make everyone bow to an ideal, we need to reveal such magnificent selves that light up a great blazing torch of hope. Let's have ideals that praise the infinite potential of each person. Let's have economists, politicians, teachers, bakers, nurses, and bricklayers who work on the basis of revealing greatness in everyone they interact with. By our own efforts, where we live and work, let's take actions that serve to bring out the greatness of everyone around us. If we stop struggling with our ignorance, it will dominate. It will become a perfect breeding ground for greed, anger, foolishness, arrogance, and doubt. Greed, anger, foolishness, arrogance, and doubt. These five tendencies wreck our lives, they wreck our societies, and they wreck our environment. And they reinforce this cycle of suffering. When we forget the mystic truth that's inherent in our lives, and instead accept our ignorance and look for happiness in our circumstances, we revert to a way of viewing the world as an endless cycle of suffering, rather than a mission to bring out our happiness and that of others. If you wish to free yourself from the sufferings of life and death, it seems to me to be clear that we need to win over our ignorance that keeps us from seeing our greatness, chant Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, and take action to create happiness for ourselves and others.
Nevertheless, even though you chant and believe in Myoho Renge Kyo, if you think the law is outside yourself, you are embracing not the mystic law, but an inferior teaching. Inferior teaching means those other than this Lotus Sutra, which are all expedient and provisional. No expedient or provisional teaching leads directly to enlightenment, and without the direct path to enlightenment, you cannot attain Buddhahood, even if you practice lifetime after lifetime for countless kalpas. Attaining Buddhahood in this lifetime is then impossible. Therefore, when you chant Myoho and recite Renge, you must summon up deep faith that Myoho Renge Kyo is your life itself.
That's really well read. This is very strict, and I think it's a point that many people who read it really struggle to understand. What are the signs of thinking that the law is outside yourself? How do we know if we're practicing an inferior teaching? Well, one way we know is if we see that everything that we're doing has become a complete pain in the backside. We are resenting our time. The Daishonin describes it in the next paragraph as an endless, painful austerity. We are practicing an inferior teaching when we blame others or complain. If we fear hardships or resent our circumstances, that's also a sign that we've misunderstood our practice. I've met some people who refuse to chant to do their human revolution because they're afraid of the circumstances which might develop to help them do this. They chant, but they don't want to do their human revolution because they're afraid of hardships and they don't want to make any effort. They are like people that go into mountaineering shops, I'm sure you've seen them. They buy all the equipment, they walk around the base of the mountain, and they talk about climbing the mountain. They have all the kit, but they have no courage to actually climb the mountain of their own life. Why should we be afraid of our human revolution, this transformation from within our own lives? In The Three Kinds of Treasure, Nichiren Daishonin writes,
Buddhism teaches that when the Buddha nature manifests itself from within, it will receive protection from without.
So if that's the case, then what have we got to be afraid of? The answer, of course, is that we're afraid because our ignorance has given rise to fear. and we're afraid of relying on anything but our limited ignorance. Sometimes we would rather cling on desperately to what we believe about ourselves, even if it causes us endless suffering. No one is without fault, and sometimes we must make mistakes in our lives that we're not proud of. And we might hold on to these mistakes as a means to qualify why we are no good, to justify why we are not Buddhas. I'm slowly coming to realize that I've been doing this to myself for a long time. When I was a child, I made a terrible mistake, and since that time, I'm beginning to realize that I often create circumstances for failure to strengthen this view that I'm not worth anything, as if in some way that will make up for my mistake. It's an illusion. For as long as this is a way of thinking that motivates my actions, I will never be able to overcome my ignorance and bring out my true self. After I became aware of this, I read this passage again, and the sentence that struck out at me was this.
When you chant Myoho and recite Renge, you must summon up deep faith that Myoho Renge Kyo is your life itself.
Since I became aware of this in my life, I've been chanting in this spirit. I am Myoho Renge Kyo. My life is Myoho Renge Kyo. Almost immediately I began to feel different, deeply different. A new joy came out of my life, a deep confidence, and many of my prayers and concerns were resolved. I am so happy I've been able to move my life on in this area. If you've not tried it, try what I'm saying for a week, just a week. Chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo with the thought, I am Buddha. I am Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. I am the mystic truth of life. Okay.
You must never think that any of the 80,000 sacred teachings of Shakyamuni's lifetime or any of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions and 3 existences are outside yourself. Your practice of the Buddhist teachings will not relieve you of the sufferings of birth and death in the least unless you perceive the true nature of your life. If you seek enlightenment outside yourself, then you're performing even 10,000 practices and 10,000 good deeds will be in vain. It is like the case of a poor man who spends night and day counting his neighbor's wealth, but gains not even half a coin. That is why the Tiantai school's commentary states, unless one perceives the nature of one's life, one cannot eradicate one's grave offenses. This passage implies that, unless one perceives the nature of one's life, one's practice will become an endless, painful austerity. Therefore, such students of Buddhism are condemned as non-Buddhists. Tiantai's great concentration and insight states that, although they study Buddhism, their views are no different from those of non-Buddhists. Whether you chant the Buddha's name, recite the sutra, or merely offer flowers and incense, all your virtuous acts will implant benefits and roots of goodness in your life. With this conviction, you should strive in faith.
He doesn't say you should try, he says you should strive. You know, sort of choice of words is amazing. If you ask anybody who practices this Buddhism sincerely, will my problems go away? They will likely say, no. It's a natural Western reaction to ask then, well, why should I practice? I've been practicing for about 7 years when I met Karen. And so she asked me about the practice and I said, your life will really grow when you chant. And so will your problems. And as your problems grow, you become stronger as you overcome them. And what did you hear, Karen?
I just heard the problem bit, that your problems get bigger.
So she forgets all of it. The bit that she picks was, you get lots of problems if you chant. Okay. People don't want problems, even the ones that they made for themselves. They keep trying to avoid them and get rid of them.
Everyone wants to be free of suffering. That's how religion started, right? The tendency of people to avoid problems and suffering is one way in which people think the law is outside themselves. From my own observation, I also think many people are looking for someone or something to come and save them from all the nastiness in life. Sometimes people want to blame others for their problems, from taxation, rent, bank charges, alimony payments, bad driving, and so on. But there is a darker side to this tendency that I've only just become aware of myself. While we are busy blaming others and allowing our ignorance to rule, our old friend fear sneaks in the back door and tries to take control of our life. This fear then prevents us from taking actions. Fear holds us in the grip of apathy and can lead us to practicing in order to receive a magical benefit. We stop taking action and we chant for hours on end. Perhaps we go and do heaps of Buddhist activities. In our minds, our ignorance has constructed a contract with the Gohonzon, that if we chant a lot and do activities, then somehow we're making the cause to solve our problems. Anybody else sign that contract at some point in their practice? If I chant loads, then somehow it's all going to be all right. But in this way, we might be tempted to use our religious activities to hide from our daily lives. I've met people who will get behind a Buddhist activity, but who won't get behind their job, or their studies, or their marriage. As if somehow, because it's for Buddhism, everything will be okay. This is deluded and is not reason. I think if we're using activities to hide from our lives, then there's not much difference between that and using substances or alcohol or other dependencies to hide from our lives. Perhaps that's why Karl Marx says that religion is the opium of the masses. If we are using religious activities to hide from our daily lives, eventually the effort involved will lead us to asking the one question. I've been doing all these activities and still my situation has not changed. How many times have we heard that or said that? Worse still is when people start to resent their lives. The contract made by their ignorance has not been fulfilled, and consequently every action becomes an endless, painful austerity. Becoming a Buddha, attaining enlightenment, is not about becoming a divine being, but about making a change in the depths of our hearts. It's not about making effort now in order to sit back and enjoy the retirement of enlightenment. Enlightenment is something to summon forth and use to enable us to overcome the darkness in life and encourage people to reveal their greatness too, here and now. Practicing Buddhism entails struggling to overcome our own ignorance and darkness. And as we do so, the light of our true selves comes to shine a magnificent light on our lives and find expression in our day-to-day activities. We either allow ourselves to be ruled by others or our environment, or we don't. We either seek the solution outside of ourselves and suffer, or within us and win. The purpose of this practice is to realize our limitless potential. If you wish, then believe in and chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Should we play a track from the Podsafe Music Network?
I think so.
Tonight we're going to play a really wonderful song recommended to me by the great Chris Hambley. It's a song from the Podsafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And it's by somebody I've never heard of before, but it's an incredible sound. It's great production. And the band is called Delaware. And the song is called Kind of Grey.
Billy had a broken arm when he met Jane Cavalier. Told her she was beautiful, she said she knew better. Taught her how to sing the blues and he taught her how to play. Said said that she was happy just to be, but Billy knew better.
Delaware singing Kind of Grey. So
thank you, that was good. Right, are we ready for the famous shout outs? I think we are. Did you know there are some people who think it's quite funny the way I say shout outs?
I'll do it again, let's see if it's funny.
Let's hear the shout outs.
Yeah, well, funny, maybe a bit erotic as well.
I think they're trying to imitate my voice.
Okay.
Right, shout outs. We have got a big, long list of shout outs.
And we've got an experience as well tonight as well.
Yes, we do. Okay. So I've sorted them a little bit out. And I do must say, the emails we do get are just so amazing. And I would love to read them all out. But I'm afraid we can't.
The bigger the audience gets, the harder it gets to do it, isn't
yes,
it? Otherwise, it'll
yes.
sound like a telephone directory for the last kind of session. But to everybody that wrote and to everybody that spoke to us, and we did our best to reply to everybody. And Vince Chan, I'm sorry I didn't get to write to you. I'm right back for your lovely comments. Thank you very much.
But for those we haven't, and also for those people who have been putting comments down either on iTunes or on the Buddhist podcast website.
Hey, you know what? That's a bit of a scam, that, well, it's not a scam, but I was looking at the reviews and on podcasts. So I went to the spiritual and religious podcast. I thought, I wonder how many reviews they've got and what kind of reviews they've got, because we've got some great reviews on ours, all 5 stars, which is terrific. And it does us sure. It's great when people are going to review to look at things. But I saw one of them was the number one religious podcast, and it was a godcast of some description. And there were 127 reviews, but they weren't really reviews, really. It was kind of like they kind of hijacked it and turned it into a religious commentary on different ideas and opinions. It's almost like they used it as a forum. Really odd. But because there's 127 reviews,
it puts it in the first place.
Yeah, I think so. I think it, you know, it has a big, significant kind of...
Right, anyway, there you hear it.
There you hear it.
On you go, onto iTunes and...
4,000 reviews for a Buddhist podcast. Anyway, thank you ever so much to those people who really took their time out to figure out how to do it and to do it for us. We really do appreciate it.
Reading. Right, I've sorted them a little bit out, so we'll start in Europe or here in England. I've got a few from London.
Okay.
One lady is called Emma.
Emma Shellard. She's from King's College London.
Yes, and so apparently is Erin... O'Halloran.
No, Erin O'Halloran.
O'Halloran.
O'Halloran. And Erin, I think, is from Canada, and she's over here studying at the LSE.
Oh, okay. Mm. And then we've got Céline Dufay.
Céline Dufay.
So she is studying as well?
She is studying there as well, and she is in a play, and we'll put in the show notes as well. So those of you who want to go along and see Leocadia in London, a French play. We'll put the dates and times of that in there.
Wonderful.
What else have we got?
We have got Marco from Italy.
Hey, Marco, ciao.
Yeah, and apparently he has translated the book The Eternal City.
Yeah, he translated The Eternal City into Italian.
Into Italian.
The Eternal City is one of President Kedda's favourite books.
It's one of yours, isn't it,
and
as well?
It's one of my favourite books as well, yeah.
And believe it or not, we finally got a listener who has written to me from Switzerland. And
I knew there was one.
Cheeky sort. And his name is Ivan P. Matthew. I hope I've pronounced that right. Thank you so much for writing to me and hope you enjoy listening to the podcast. Right, now I've got a bit of a... we've got Rani from Iceland, and I'm afraid, I don't know if you speak Icelandic, but I will not even try to pronounce her name.
It's a unique language.
It'll
probably be the first country for Cozen Roof in the world because of the population.
Do you know what the population is?
I don't know. It's small but determined.
Right. But I can say...
Hi, Rani.
I can say that her district is called the Rising Sun in Reykjavik chapter, and she's a district leader. Thank you so much, Rani, for writing to us. It's really good.
Big hello to all your district as well.
Yes. Right.
I'm saying hello to Ilona. Hi, Ilona. How are you doing? Ilona's got a great podcast. Go and have a look at it. Teachersatrisk.com. It's fantastic. It's great. It's really, I love the homespun feel about it. I love the content. I love the material. The last few have been about bullying. Either teachers that bully or students that bully, and really looking at it from a different perspective, I think.
I have been listening to it. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Yeah, and she is from Canada, isn't it?
That's right.
And so is Leah Russell from Montreal.
Hi, Leah.
Thank you so much for your wonderful emails.
She's a very talented designer.
She is. I went to one of her websites. Ooh.
Beautiful.
Wow, wow. Right, over to the States. We got Roxanne Ray. Yeah,
from lives in
Ashland, Oregon. Yeah, she's got a little story, hasn't she? You see how much people are connected.
Oh, by the way, there's a website. Again, we'll put it in the show notes. But Roxanne has written some great articles about anger. And she also does therapy with children and with people using Santray therapy. It's really, really very clever.
All right.
Yeah, really thoughtful. Really.
I'll have to go and check that one out.
So we'll definitely put a link in there.
Right.
It'd be great if I could find my way up to Oregon in September.
Yeah, you're already dashing around the globe.
Okay.
Maybe I should go. There's Jill from Boston. Then we got Danielle Perez, and he's studying at the University of California.
Yeah, that's right, with a students group. And there's a load of SGI members who've been kind enough in Facebook to put links to our show all over the place.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Amazing.
Thank you, Emma. Thank you.
There's Vince Chan.
Yeah, from New Jersey.
Hi, Vince. That's right.
And Tarneel.
Tarneel from Washington Tarneel State.
Yep.
Thank you so much for writing to us.
And Lindbergh. And she's a friend of Larry Congdon's. Shall I sneak in that experience now?
Yes, yes, well,
so
about it.
Larry
yes.
Congdon had a triple bypass heart surgery on April the 18th. So we were chanting for him, and we sent him a mini show to encourage him. And I'm just going to read you a little bit from this experience. So this is a guy who 3 weeks ago was in the intensive care unit having triple bypass. And he says, it's been a little over 3 weeks since my surgery. But I'm still tired as my heart gets up to speed, and I'm still constantly sore as my breastbone heals. Although I'm told there were complications during my bypass surgery, I think and I'm told that I'm doing really well. I'll still be off work for at least 3 more weeks, though, and there might be some challenges with money. But when I've faced that issue in the past, somehow things have worked out. As I prepared for the operation, I felt I was giving everything up. Letting go, having to rely on the fact that I had a 9th consciousness. I was lying naked as I was shaved totally the night before. The hospital made my parents take away all my possessions, as nothing personal was allowed in the intensive care unit after the surgery. Before I was wheeled down to the surgery prep, I had to even hand them my glasses to be delivered to the intensive care unit's nurse desk. And I had that song by Genesis, Afterglow, running through my head as I prepared late into the night before. As I was being prepped by the anesthesiologist, just before the surgery, he finally said, "Now I'm going to give you some truth serum." And I lamely joked in a robotic voice, "The gold is behind the back porch." The last thing I remember until I woke up 16 hours later, despite my lifelong depression, despite my loneliness and regret, despite my fears, despite how I think, I act, and will react to things, despite my chronic self-deprecation, the reality is, my practice made me so confident and at ease that at the most crucial moment of my life, I was able to make someone laugh. Isn't that a great experience?
Wonderful.
Oh, terrific. Congratulations, Larry.
Oh, yes.
And to Lynn for supporting.
Yes.
And to the parents and everybody. That's great news. Really. Here's good. To another 40 years.
Thank you for that. Mm. Then we've got Evelina Ferruso. I hope I pronounced that right. She's from New York.
And what a beautiful letter she sent. It's really
lovely. Yeah, apparently she's an artist. And while she paints, she listens to our Buddhist podcast.
And
I'd love to see those pictures.
Xavier Pick does that as well.
Yeah,
hi, Xavier. How are you doing?
Yes, that's right. He lives in London too. Mm. Yes, yeah. And we've got Craig Neely from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, Craig.
And I don't know where Christopher Killinger comes from. And Ray Koski. Do you know where Ray Koski?
From America.
From America. Yeah. Right. And going right over to the Far East, a lady called Lim from Singapore. And she wrote, "Oh, Lily, really."
Are you sure it's a lady?
Maybe it's a man, Lim.
Somebody.
Someone. Huh. Okay. Yeah. She wrote a lovely email. And apparently, in the district or the area he or she is practicing, there's a blind believer. And apparently, he or she can only chant Daimoku and has very little opportunity to go to meetings or meet people. And so she
listens to the show.
Listens to the show. So Lim brings downloads the show, and
puts it on a CD and But a lot of people seem to be doing that. That's great. Thank you so much for people that put them on CDs and get them out to people. Thank you so much. That's, I wish we could do it. I wish we had a machine that could make it happen.
Could what make happen?
Well, just if we found out anybody who couldn't get the show to be able to kind of put their address in and send them a CD, it'd be terrific. Okay.
Yes.
I'm sure I had something else. Oh, we got a party.
Ooh.
Because we're celebrating our 40th birthday, Karen and I, in July. So if you're in England or wherever you are and you want to come, you're welcome to. There's space in the garden. we're doing tents. We're doing food. We're doing live music and bands. And the 7th of July. So if you want to come along, send us an email so we can anticipate and, you know, call the police.
You know, it's such a cool date. It's the 7th of the 7th.
Of the 7th.
Of the 7th.
Yeah. Yeah.
So put that in your diary.
Well, that is terrific. 40. 40 today. 40 yeah, today.
Jason's still a baby. I've passed that stage already, so he hasn't reached it yet.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. You said that.
I did.
You know, you're only as young as the woman you feel.
Mm.
Yeah, which means I'm 40.
Right.
Should we finish with a song?
I think so.
And we're going to play a song tonight by a guy called Phil Ayoub. This song grew and grew and grew on me, and it's called Goodnight Kiss.
It's gotten late. The sun's been down for hours. I'm lying in this bed awake, trying to summon all my powers, not to run to you on a rail, not to cover you like rain, not to give in to the thing I miss. 1,000 miles for a good night kiss. I drive all night to kiss your cheek in the morning. With the dawn, it don't deserve your light. With the sunrise, I'm falling. Warm at your feet, coming up through the sheets. Lord have mercy on a boy like this. 1,000 miles for a good night kiss. If I had you now, kiss me now, and you can go right back to sleep. La 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 la, la 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 la. I'm not gonna lie just to argue, I know I was guilty of spending too much time making music, not enough time making love. I'm driving you to another man with a money back guarantee. Oh, well that ain't loving, honey, no. But at least you get more sleep. La 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 la, la 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 la. Every girl thinks it's about her. Oh, I'm only thinking of you. I'll be warm in your bed like a snow day. Sleep until 1:45. If you let me be your friendly neighbor,
Yeah, I will be your ice cream man. You will be my favorite flavor. I'll have you melt in my mouth and my hand. Well, good night, cake. Good night, cake. La-da. Good night, girl. La-da, la-da, la. La-da.
So, that was Phil Ayoub singing Goodnight Kiss from the Podsafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And
thank you for listening to the show. Until next time, on a Buddhist podcast, stand tall and take great care of yourself and the people around you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.